Just before the news, we heard devastating testimony from Maria about the situation in her household with a son with stage 3 autism, and the frankly heartbreaking statement at the end of Maria's piece there, that it was easier to get long-term residential care for her son in Longford than it was to get respite in his own home county of Donegal. And that's obviously resonated with a lot of people. Caller says, so sad listening to Maria's story. Unbelievable that people need to fight for basic facilities, help and respite. Our public representatives need to be getting this addressed. We need more beds in Inishowen and all of Donegal for respite. Too many government quangos within the HSC, and these agencies are not doing their jobs properly. Feeling sad today for all carers. Another caller says, this government just doesn't care about children with disabilities or their parents. You can't ignore the hashtags Justice for Harvey and Harris Resign. This whole country is talking about it, but the Sleeveen media is afraid to call out Simon Harris, who said in 2017 that no child would wait more than 4 months for scoliosis surgery. Earlier we spoke about the situation with Irish Water, Ishka Aaron, particularly around about the Tlochinilli, Falcarra, Dunfanaghy area. Caller says the people of Donegal should take back ownership of their water from Irish Water and put it back into the hands of Donegal County Council. Another caller, we need to look in depth at why Irish Water was established and who's really behind it, because they're not fit for purpose. The system worked well under the old system where each council looked after their own supply. Another caller says the councillor is talking nonsense about dredging the Shannon. Irish Water want to pipe water from the Shannon to Dublin to facilitate data centres. It's a ridiculous idea. In fairness to Councillor McLaverty, it was me that raised that issue on the basis that that is one of the major infrastructural projects being considered by government. It wasn't that Michael was saying it should be done. I first raised the issue. So if anyone began that nonsense talk in fairness about the Shannon, it was me. It's the law of the least effort and the cheapest option, which then means more chemicals in the water, hence the cloudy water. So says a caller. Another caller says the piping nationally has been the issue for decades. 40% of water supply is lost annually through leaks. Again, another caller saying the water services should never have been taken from Donegal County Council. That's being echoed by lots of people. Is Irish Water trying to get us to pay water charges? A person is asking. Look, we had that whole water charges debate some time ago. I think the people spoke eloquently, the people spoke loudly, and it appears in this instance at least the government listened, and I'm not sure any government in the short term is going to try to get that one over the line again, because they know they're going to have a fight on their hands. Caller says all water systems are depending on reservoirs. The system of supply and holding system needs to be looked at. We just don't have the capacity. Another caller says if these tourist towns have such water issues, why is building and expansion of businesses allowed to continue? It's being allowed on the understanding that there will be a water supply. That's my assumption. Another caller says there's a pump house in our area. The overflow is running down the street. Surely it could be collected in a bowser and given out to people to wash their animals or put on flowers or whatever. It's 20 past 10. We're a few minutes over, but if you play Highland Radio Vision Ireland Radio Bingo, it's time for you to grab your books, to grab your pens, and we will hand you over to Canis.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
We're joined on line one by Leo Leggio. Now, Leo is the Vice President of the Irish Road Victims Association, and you'll have heard on news last evening with Katie and earlier today with Donna Marie as well, that Leo and the association are calling for the introduction of a charge of vehicular manslaughter. Leo, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Leo, you lost you sadly lost your daughter 20 years ago in Clondalkin. She was knocked down by a pedestrian who failed to remain at the scene and then was involved in another incident in Belfast. It transpired that a number of charges were levelled against that person. You believe that people such as that, it's not just enough to have a charge of dangerous driving causing death. There needs to be a direct manslaughter charge.
Yeah, like us at Irv have for a long time been calling for more consistent road policing and support for victims' families. We're not pointing the finger for the sake of it, but we want a safer roads and a justice system that protects the public. Like changing the charge changes the message it sends out. It sends out a clear message that reckless driving that kills is a serious crime, not a mistake. When someone makes the choice to drive dangerous, they're making the choice to put lives at risk. And when that choice kills, it's a crime. And that deserves to be treated as such. And at the moment, it's not treated as real crime.
And you believe then, obviously, that a charge of vehicular manslaughter would have significantly stronger and more severe penalties attached to it, including lengthy imprisonment terms.
Yeah, it highlights the message that this is serious. You know, people might say it's too harsh, but what's harsh is losing a child, losing your mother or your brother because someone chose to drive recklessly. The term needs to reflect the reality. A life is taken.
Under what conditions would you like to see that vehicular manslaughter charge imposed? Is it in cases where people don't remain at the scene, or is it in all cases where a death is held, or is it going to be dependent on the outcome of a Garda investigation? Where does the, as it were, cut-off point between dangerous driving causing death end and vehicular manslaughter begin, or is it vehicular manslaughter across the board as far as you're concerned?
Anybody with drink on, that's been drink driving, using their mobile phone, or excessive speed, like I said, depends on the investigation. I can understand where people come along and say that there's no intent, if you went there with a gun or a knife, but what's the law calls reckless intent, and when you knowingly take an action that's highly likely to risk cause death, then someone. When someone drives dangerous, drunk or high speeds and use phone, they're making a conscious choice to take a deadly risk. And that deserves to be called what it is. Like, there's too much ambiguity at the moment between dangerous driving causing death and careless driving causing death. And the DPP always seem to go for the lesser charge for careless driving. And that results in two years in prison. And then by the time the judge allows for mitigating the circumstances, they're virtually getting away with it. And that there's no justice in that. Where's the justice in that?
Is there
taking someone's life?
Is there a risk that a more serious charge, such as manslaughter, would also need a more serious level of proof? And there is a chance that a person charged with vehicular manslaughter might actually not be convicted, whereas they may have been convicted on the lesser dangerous or reckless driving causing death charge.
When you're on the other end of a fatality, don't know, like if it's your, if it was like my child, I would rather go to court and that person face the full rigours of the law than someone to get away with 10 months or walk out of court. Like, I think victims should have a choice.
Yeah.
Should be consulted when the DPP wants to charge for a lesser charge. Like, it's madness. Like, yeah. At the moment, I think the longest sentence handed out for dangerous driving causing death is 4.5 years. You get more than that if you don't pay your tax.
And a manslaughter charge would get a longer sentence.
Yeah, but it's send a message to the jury, to the judge, and that this is a serious, that it's a real crime. It's not just a motoring offence; it's a crime.
You mentioned intent earlier, and I mean, my understanding always was that in cases of intent, that's murder, and intent or lack thereof is the difference between murder and manslaughter. So if anyone were to say, oh, it can't be manslaughter because there isn't intent, I mean, my understanding of the definition of manslaughter is causing death by predictable circumstances without necessarily meaning it, and that would certainly seem to fall under the purview of what you're saying.
Yeah, and as far as I know, if you kill someone in the process of committing a crime, it's manslaughter. Driving with alcohol or drugs on you, speeding and using a mobile, they're crimes, and you're committing a crime. And in the process, if you kill someone, why not? Like, don't get me wrong, I don't believe the government, there'll be any movement in the government on this, but we need to highlight that. The vehicular crime is a crime, and not just a motoring offence, not just something that can be passed over and somebody get a slap on the wrist. There's too many people walking out of court with suspended sentences and scot-free. Maybe the judge's hands are tied, I don't know, because there isn't proper investigations. And like I said, enforcement is crucial. We need speed limits that are reflective of the penalties and deterrence that will actually work.
the last couple of years has seen, it seems, a marked increase in the amount of victims' organisations that are campaigning on this. We have groups like yourself, obviously. You've been a voice for many years. We've got our own Susan Gray, who I'm sure you've met and worked with over the years. Susan from Donegal here, who's involved in Park, and others involved in Park as well. That there seems to be more and more a voice coming from those who have been at the other end of the knock on the door, who have been at their relatives' funerals, who have seen what's happened and the devastation caused by these road collisions, and more we're seeing you, the victims, speak out. Do you believe that ultimately we will see changes in the law and changes in the approach to road policing because of those campaigns?
Well, we pray to God that we will, but I don't think that the will is there in the government. It's like they always came to brush over things and make all these promises, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that, but everything takes years, and in the meantime 150 odd people are going to die every year. Like, so for so many families, the fear is real. After the crash, after the funeral, the system doesn't care enough to protect the next child, the next mother, the next brother, and that pain never goes, that pain never fades.
And one of the first things you want to see happen is the families be given more of a say as to what charge is preferred. You believe when we hear about sort of pre-court hearings that the DPP should be speaking to yourselves, that the DPP should be, as well as victim impact statements at trials, perhaps we should have a victim impact statement pre-trial, which actually outlines what the family want to see happen over the course of the investigation and the follow-up.
Yeah, I think we should have more involvement. It goes across the board now with all crime action, because the victims aren't consulted, and it's like we're the ones suffering a life sentence. If you know what I mean? We're the ones suffering every day, mm-hmm. by the culprit. It's all the legal aid they can, and all the psychologists and the sympathy from the courts. While we're sitting in their court there with no one by our side, we have to do everything ourselves. Like, us and Irish shouldn't have to do this. We have gone through enough. We have to support each other, and now we find ourselves we're having to campaign, do the work of the government, do the work of the people that should be doing it.
Leo, we'll keep an eye.
We need changes.
Yeah, we need
the government and the courts to stand up.
Yeah. We'll certainly keep a very close eye on this, Leo, and thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Leo Leggio, who's the Vice President of the Irish Road Victims Association. Leo lost his own daughter, Marcia, to a hit-and-run driver in Clondalkin in Dublin 20 years ago, and I'm sure that's a pain that never goes away. Leo, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donald Kavanagh with you on till 12 midday now. It's time for the dreaded three words that start to creep into conversation in families in the first week or so in August. And the dreaded three words are back to school. And we're joined in studio by Tina McLaughlin, who's a primary school teacher in Carrigart. Tina, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. Thanks for having me.
Great to see you. We're still in the summer holidays, of course, so we're thinking back to school, but I mean, hey, there's a couple of weeks left yet. So important now that we plan it, but by the same token, we don't over egg the custard, so to speak.
Absolutely. And that's my very first point. It is still summer. We're going to enjoy these next 2 weeks. I'm also a mammy. I have two children myself, a 7 and a 9-year-old. And these next 2 weeks are all about making sure that we make those memories. We only have 18 summers with our child. Well, I say mum and dad, they've done 41, but but we have to make these memories now over the next 2 weeks. And it doesn't have to be anything extravagant. I mean, I would say talk to your child, ask your child what they want to do, and think back about your own childhood mm-hmm. memories. Maybe something as simple as making a den in the back garden, or making a Coke float, or whatever it is. You know, it's very simple things. Children don't want anything crazy big. They just want you. They just want time with you, and they want fun memories. So we do have these 2 weeks. However, we do have to keep one eye on, well, it used to be the 1st of September, but it's crept back a bit now.
is sort of the last week in August, really. And
right, and like we still work the 100, we still go to school for the 182 days, but we've pulled it back a little bit to make it a little bit more flexible throughout the year. So that day is looming when we're back to school. So it would be the time now to start thinking about, okay, let's get back to school, let's get a little bit ready, let's bring back the bedtime a little bit, let's get slightly back into routine. Little things, small steps, not a big slam, here it is, we're back to school.
Yeah.
But there's little things you can do. From a teacher's perspective, I guess the thing that we would encourage parents and families to do with their child is to help them build their independence. Now, this has to be age and developmentally appropriate, of course. But, you know, little things like, can they tie their shoes? And if they can't tie their shoes for whatever reason, then, you know, take away the laces, give them Velcro instead. Make it easy for your child. Your child is going to be, unfortunately, in a class of up to about 30 children, maybe more. It's just the current system. It's the way it's the current system that we're in. It's supposed to be 23. But it's in reality, it's not. We have much bigger classes than that. And if your child doesn't have their shoes laces tied, and they're in junior infants, and there's 10 of them don't have the shoelaces tied, it's just a practicality thing. So just take away the shoelaces, take away that problem for them, give them Velcro until they can tie their shoelaces. And even if they're in fourth or fifth class, there's great, I have shoes with Velcro, there's great, great shoes. Let's just make life easier. Little things like...
I wear Crocs, let's be honest.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I wear these.
Crocs are great. My children have been living in, they're great.
I would live in them if I could.
Yeah. yeah, thank goodness they've made a comeback. So little things like, can they put on and can they fasten their own coat? There's that skill of where they put it over their head, that a lot of the preschool teachers, shout out to the amazing preschool teachers who are doing incredible things with the children in the early years. Can their water bottle, their school bag, their lunchbox, their pencil case, can they actually open and close it? Please not a metal water bottle. I don't know if you've ever been in a classroom with 30 metal water bottles and them all falling to
when
the floor.
When I was in a classroom, the way you got water was you went up to the tap and you got a glass and you drank it. There was none of this bottled water invented when I was in a school, let's be honest about it, Tina. I have about 20 years on you.
Well, that's just kind of, I know that can kind of be, and it's not even so much for the teachers, that can set off a child and be like, it's a real distraction when the metal bottle hits the floor. So just simple things like that, making sure that they can open and close it themselves. And if they can't, it's not the end of the world. Like us teachers, we're not going to be like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
I'm not going to open that for you. Of course, we're going to open it for you. But it's just, again, building that independence for your child. Little things like can they go to the toilet? You know, and a way to practice that is to take them into a shopping centre or into a restaurant and, you know, talking them through it. Because I've had a lot of children in the past who just don't go to the toilet because of that fear, and just, you know, give them that wee social story, give them that wee talk about this is what you do and, you know, it's going to be okay. And, you know, talk to the teacher if you have concerns in any way about your child and, you know, and how they are developing. Because that's what we're here for. Yeah.
And that seems to be a lot easier now because, I mean, every classroom has one or two toilets in it, as far as I can see.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, it used to be, like, I know when I went to school, like, my mum would have went into the parent-teacher meeting once a year, and that was it, and that was the only ever contact, unless Tina was being a wee bit...
I mean, the first line we learnt in school was, "An bhfuil cadhg an don
Yeah, right. It is.
And the wonderful thing now is people of a certain age will hear me say that, and they, what's he talking about? Can I go out? Why would he want to go out? I mean, you know, whereas I'm sure you know exactly what I mean when I say that.
I know, now we do a hand signal where we put our hand up when we say leprous because it's just so much easier. And I just let children go because, you know what, it's just go. And we're very lucky the toilets are in the classroom. But yeah, little things like that there can cause a little bit of worry in children. Yeah. And those are the things. And like, you know, whenever you're having that conversation with your child, you know, it's just creating that wee sense of responsibility, that wee sense of ownership with the child as well.
Many of us are lucky. We have children. I can't wait to see Mary again. I can't wait to see John again. I can't wait to see my friends again. And they're looking forward to going back to school and the little social networks. But there's a text in from a caller. Last week, I told the kids we'd have to start a wee routine again to get them into the school mode immediately. The one child who's finding school difficult said, "I don't feel well."
Oh,
she's 9. How do I make her love school again?
Oh, very small steps. Excuse me. Just have a wee conversation with her about what it is that she doesn't like, because it's not that she doesn't like school. There's something in it that's bothering her. I'm guessing. I don't know your child, but from my experience, it would be about, okay, is it what I try to do with my children that I teach, and my children that I own, my own children, is that I try and help them focus, like shift their focus to the positive. You know, what are the things they like about it? You know, like this morning my son went to a camp and it started to rain, and it was an outdoor camp, and he started to get upset. He didn't want to go. And I was like, oh, you might see your friends there. So try and focus on that color. You know, what are the things your 9-year-old would be looking forward to? Is there anything at school that they really enjoy? Maybe they do an assembly at the end of the week. Maybe they haven't seen a friend or, you know, for a while. But and even like I would say, if a child is a wee bit anxious about going back to school, maybe like drive past the school if you can. And if the child is starting the school for the first time, be like, oh, this is where you're going to hang out with Donald and Tina. Or, you know, like name people that you know, you're either their cousins or your neighbours. But, you know, try and focus, try and shift their focus onto what is fun about school. But the main thing is, every day a child goes to school, they go home. And that's the first thing I tell them. Mm-hmm. Somebody will be there to collect you. You're not allowed to live here. You're not, as no matter how much fun you have, you can't stay here. We all got to leave. And somebody will be there to collect them at the end of the day, whether that they go on the bus or they walk home or a parent or grandparent collects them. Just focus on that. That, you know, each day, just take each day.
And I suppose too, if we as parents, when I say we as parents, my baby is now 31, but you know, we as parents can make it easier on them by trying to keep our stress internalized to ourselves, in terms of making sure that we don't spend the last day before school running around going, where's your markers, where's your pens, where's your copies, where's your book, where'd you put your school bag? Maybe now is the time to start figuring out where the school bag is, and if they've lost something, which inevitably they have, it's their job, they're kids, you know, now is the time to start sussing out where everything is and getting it all together, so we don't have the panic on the day.
Absolutely, like that's a life skill, having we have a spot under our stairs for the shoes, so it's like no matter where we're going, the shoes have to be in this box, and the coat is in a certain place, and that's year round, that's not just for school. Like get your children into the routine of leaving their school bags somewhere. Not like I know myself, there's days I come home from school and I fire that bag in the door, because you know that's life. But just get into the habit of leaving it. Like designate a spot in your house, and that the children, again going back to that development independence, that they can go and find their shoes, that they know where their toothbrush and their toothpaste is in the morning. Mornings are hectic. They've had hopefully a nice summer time to rest and recover, because school is, it's a lot for them. It's, you know, it's a lot for their cognitive load. There's a lot going on. But I would say, please spend these next 2 weeks, label everything, whatever, you buy the labels or you get a pen, get a marker, but please, especially coats, jumpers, ties, hats, bags, bottles, put extra glue sticks in your child's bag, and also colours. For some strange reason, whenever we go to do anything, there's no reds. No child has a red crayon. I don't know if they're eating them. I don't know what's going on with them. So maybe some extra, you know, if you have somebody saying, oh, do they need anything for going back to school? Yeah, crayons, glue sticks. I'm telling you, they just disappear by March. Every school in the country is looking for a glue stick. So have those extra items for your child, so that it's, if you can, if you're in a position to. And it's also a way to encourage kindness. You know, have your child be the child that says, well, if somebody doesn't have a pencil, let them borrow yours. But also, take it back whenever the child is done. Like, you know, don't be a doormat either. Like, but it's, you know, now is the time to gather up those resources and have those spares ready. But I mean, like, that's life. Like, kids are going to lose stuff all the time. That's what kids do.
Yeah. And most importantly, try to get the kids to enjoy school. And once you get them off to school, enjoy the break yourself.
Absolutely. And would you say, just prepare them academically, just one last point. Just read to your child.
Yeah.
And let your child see you reading. Let your child read to you. Use your Cupla Focal if you can during the day. You know, instead of saying time for bed, say, you know, time for Labba, or, you know, pass me the Banya, or later hull. Try and sneak in those little bits of Cupla Focal. But also, just for parents to be aware, there's a lot of change in the curriculum this year and next year. So it's very play-based emphasis from junior infants right up to sixth class. So we're definitely not being taught, your child is not going to be taught the way we were taught, and that's a good thing.
Amen.
Just be ready for that.
Yeah. I envy kids today, actually, because we just had a Well, you know yourself, Buntus and everything else when we were in school. I mean, you know, our idea of fun time was having pictures of Peter and Jane stuck up on a blackboard and say, show A Peter, show A Jane, show A Spot. And on that note, Tina, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much indeed for joining us this morning. It's food for thought for people. So the most important thing is let's start getting ready now so we're all as stress-free as possible when it comes to the actual return. Tina McLaughlin, thank you very much. Now, delighted to say we're joined in studio by Richard Crawford, who's Managing and Business Development Manager at Ungrillin Theatre. Richard, you're very welcome.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It's our absolute pleasure. Richard, you've got a new campaign in Ungrillin, and Ungrillin, since it opened in 1999, has become just an absolute mainstay of the cultural life of Donegal. But the seats that are in the theatre now are the same seats that were in the theatre when it opened over 25 years ago. It's going to be the big 25 years party last year. And they're getting a little bit on the worn side, so you're into a campaign to actually replace the seating and make it just a little bit more comfy. And this is an area in which local people and patrons can very much play a part.
Yes, they can. So as you say, the seats are 25 years old, so they are a little bit tired looking. There's a little bit of tape holding a few of them together. They have served us very well and we've had them replaced and upgraded over the years, but they've just reached the end of their life now. So as you say, we started a campaign a little bit back to have them replaced. And when the theatre first opened 25 years ago, it was very much the community that made it happen.
It was.
And again, that's what we need again is the community to get behind this, because it is a community space. It's there for the community, and we're so delighted that people have got behind it again 25 years later, so that we can secure the theatre, I suppose, for the next generation of theatre goers. But we're in the midst of it now. We're just at the beginning of actually starting the renovation process, which is very, very exciting for us to see. But yeah, we're all looking forward to seeing new seating in the auditorium for sure.
The campaign is called the Take a Seat campaign. And effectively what you're asking is for people to make a contribution towards a seat. And in doing so, they get to put a little bit of a message on the back of the seat. They can choose their own if they so wish. And it means that you can have a little personalised part of yourself in the theatre while also helping to ensure it into the future.
Yeah, so it's just a little note that you can add to one of the seats to have a lasting legacy, I suppose, there. So some people are taking one as a family and maybe putting a nice quote on it. Mm-hmm. Other people are taking it as in memory of a loved one. Like there's lots of different reasons someone might sponsor a seat, but just having that little memento there on the back of it, that little plaque that has that little note to people that they can see whenever they're in the auditorium is fantastic. And that's what people did 25 years ago. And just to note that all of the original plaques from the seats 25 years ago are being made into a legacy art piece. So anyone who did sponsor any of the original seats, we are very much holding on to those plaques and making a beautiful art piece out of them, because they are so important to us still 25 years on.
And that's nice, because I mean, no one who's been in the theatre in the past couple of months could have failed but to notice that huge display upstairs, charting the history of the theatre and charting all the various groups. It was put together for the 25th anniversary, obviously, but it really shows the legacy of the theatre and that community legacy in particular that you referred to there. And this will be a very important part of that, and it's hugely important to see that community involvement noted. Where are we? As you said, you're beginning the process now of the renovation. Where are we, and what's the sort of timeline?
So at the moment, the one in tender for the actual seating was Cahill Scott Seating. So those guys moved in last week. So they have started to remove the seating. Then next step is carpet. So that'll be coming out in the next week or so. Then we start the process of putting it all back together again. So about 3 or 4 weeks time, we should have the full process finished. So the new auditorium will be ready to go in about 3 or 4 weeks time, but the sponsor seat will continue for as long as we can keep it going. Like if someone wants to sponsor seat as a Christmas present, that's an option for them. Do you know, like, this is not just for now. There's always improvements needed in the theatre, because as we say, it's 25 years old, mm-hmm. and there's a few cracks starting to show. We're right in the thick of it now, and we'll be sharing some behind the scenes and different bits and pieces over the next couple of weeks as we see the changes happen. But we're very excited to see the beginning stages of it, I suppose.
Important to say too, I mean, in terms of downstairs, the booking office downstairs remains open, the cafe remains open. Although, is there a change of management coming up in the cafe?
We've had a bit of changes. So, but the cafe is very much still up and running. The box office is there if you need us. All the team are still in house. So the only difference is the auditorium's closed for a few weeks. But yeah. We'll be raring to go in a few weeks again to kick off the shows again for the new season.
I'm really looking forward actually to see how it turns out. The last show I was actually at was. The groovy Sundays jazz show during the Eric Lars Festival. That's the last show in the theatre I was at. Now, and even then I was thinking, I wonder is this the last time I'll see it looking like this? So
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to getting back in there. I've been in the theatre once or twice over the past
just
25
a few times.
Years. Just a few times. I think I've been in, figured it out one day, I've been in, I think, 33 shows over the course of the 25 years.
Yeah.
We have a long family history with that theatre. But we're at the point now where the actual new seating is going in. Yeah. And it's important because it is a community thing. And a lot of the time people say, oh, well, the theatre is just the theatre. But it's not. I mean, it's used, and there's a potential for it to be used for even more things like conferences, because we've seen it used, for instance, for the briefing talks for the rally before the start of the rally. We've seen one or two conferences in there over the years.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's a space that could be used more for that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I know we've said it a few times, but like, it is very much a community space. And even though we don't have shows on in the auditorium this week, we have a youth theatre on this week. The Pride Festival's been hosted there later this week. There's that Donegal Mila has been hosted there this month. So it's always a space that is there for the community. And just as you mentioned, conference, we do have a very exciting one that I can't talk about just yet, but coming up later this year, that's very much Donegal focused. The space is there for all of those things. It is a community space, so it's there for the community.
And you've actually, in a sense, almost anticipated my next question, because it was going to be about the development that took place over the past 12 to 18 months outside. That space outside now, there's a bit of a covered area for eating, for so on and so forth, but also for performance. And we've seen it used to great effect by Pride in the past couple of years, but as you say, the media as well. So it's not only an inside space, it is that outside space as well. And if the weather cooperates, I mean, it's a beautiful little piazza almost in front of the theatre, and that's really coming into its own now as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And again, I think for the first while people were unsure of, like, oh, can we go up here, are we allowed to use this space? But again, it's for everybody. You can call into us obviously and get a tea or coffee and sit out and enjoy the good weather when we have it. But we're always looking to kind of take the next steps for the theatre, I suppose, to modernise it and make it a more useful space for the community. But the outside space has been a game changer for us. We love it ourselves, and it's just getting more and more use, which is absolutely fantastic to see.
So if anyone does want to go back to the Take a Seat campaign, if anyone is interested in sponsoring a seat, Richard, how do they go ahead about doing that?
So if you want to contact me directly, my email is richard@ingraydon.com. You can also get me on the phone, 074-912-0777. You can also check out information online at ingraydon.com. There's a specific page there for all the seating. So there's a few different ways, but if you want any additional information, just give me a shout. I'm there almost all the time, so you can catch me anytime.
Richard Crawford, thank you very much indeed. Marketing and Business Development Manager at Ingraydon Theatre. We'll take a short break. Headlines are next.